Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. I'm Brandon and on the other line it's my co-host Josh. Josh, was there a Poku jersey under the Christmas tree this year?
Oh yes, home, away, and second Sunday away. Three different jerseys.
Now did you get the shorts and the socks as well?
I did, yes.
True,
the whole set.
The whole kit.
And a trip to Ghana to meet his family. So wow. It's incredible. It's a real Poku festival, festival of fun this Christmas.
You can find that on NYCFC's online shop. It's the Poku gift basket.
The Poku total immersion experience.
where you get to wear Poku's face for a few weeks.
Yeah, it's like Silence of the Lambs. It's a little disturbing.
It is. That is disturbing. Now, true story, I asked for a Fulham shirt one Christmas, which my mother did oblige. And I opened the wrapping, and I found the jersey, the home jersey. And I was like, oh, Mom, this is so great, Fulham shirt. And then underneath, she's like, wait, there's more. And underneath was a pair of official Adidas socks. And I was kind of like, oh, what am I going to do with these? I mean, first of all, if you gave me the shorts and the socks, then I'd be a full kit wanker, and that's no good. But here now, you've just given me the socks.
So
am I going to wear these socks?
Are they the kind of socks that you like pull up like above the knee, like super serious, like official?
No, these are like the official Adidas socks, uniform socks, like that the players wear over their shin guards.
Oh wow, interesting. Okay,
so next time we play pickup in the park. Maybe I should just go full Fulham kit, but I'll wear my cut-off jean shorts instead.
Yeah, I like it.
All right, so beyond all our stories of gift-giving, we do have a lot to cover because, hey, it's been a while since we've rapped at you. We've missed three game weeks.
Well, I shouldn't say we missed them because we previewed all three game weeks at once.
That's which true. Always cheating. The Always Cheating Pod didn't leave you hanging.
I mean, it would have been a bit of a technical challenge, I think, to get these up in time for anybody to actually find them useful. You know, I mean, especially the game week in between the 26th and the 28th, that was kind of a fast turn. We could have done one the next week, but laziness really got in the way, I think.
Some call it logistics, others call it laziness.
It was a little bit of all three.
So on the whole,
I don't know what the third one. It's a little bit of all two.
How do you feel you did over the last 3 weeks? Just how did Josh Landon's team do? Was it a net gain or a net loss?
I had a great start. The first game, honestly, I think I had a little hubris. I think my hubris was my downfall this time.
Uh-huh. Which is amazing considering how humbled you've been throughout most of the season.
So I had a great game week 18. Had a little bit of a differential captain in Harry Kane. Not a huge differential, but not one of the people that everybody was picking that game week. So Harry Kane had a big week. I had Kevin De Bruyne who had a big game week. Had a couple clean sheets, and everything just really came together that game week. And Mesut Ozil blanked, which is also really important because I don't have Ozil. Right. And now, of course, I should have Ozil, which gets to game week 19. So game week 19 is the first of two game weeks at home for Arsenal. You really needed to have Mesut Ozil for these game weeks. And this is where my hubris factored in because I decided that I was going to go for a differential Arsenal player and I was going to bring in Theo Walcott. And I watched game week 19 with you, Brandon.
Yes, and we did our usual trip to the bar where I guess.
Yeah, so what? How was I? Can you describe what I was like watching the Arsenal Bournemouth game, like a step removed?
Sure. It was definitely a game of escalation for you, as Theo was getting chance after chance because Ozil, ball on the string as he has it, kept feeding the ball right to him in front of goal,
clear on goal in some cases.
I would describe it as you holding a water glass through the entire game and your grip getting tighter and tighter and tighter to the point where I thought you were going to squeeze this glass so it exploded and shattering glass everywhere.
I know that I, I did something which I never do at bars because I hate like jockey people who yell at the TV at bars. Uh-huh. But at one point at the end of the game, I remember I just like, for Christ's sake, Theo, I was just so mad. And we were there with you and our friend Trevor. And when Mesut Ozil scored that goal, you guys, I think you guys could tell I was in full meltdown.
Oh, yeah, and I am a long supporter of Mesut and my fantasy team, and that was a really powerful moment for my squad. But I bit my tongue.
You did. You and Trevor both, neither of you said anything. To my credit, I didn't complain either. We all just watched Theo Walcott score that goal in complete silence at the table.
I think you, at that point, you went out and to take a walk. To clear your head for a few minutes. And I remember saying to Trevor at that time, if Hector Bellerin loses this clean sheet, we may never see Josh again.
And I did. I actually went outside and I leaned against the wall, like around. It was so embarrassing. Like, I am like a real, like, I am 30. I'm in my mid 30s. Like, I can't be doing this, right? I mean, it's too much. I pulled myself together.
You're a passionate viewer, Josh. You're a passionate viewer.
Pulled myself.
That was an interesting. We were at this bar called the Black Horse Pub on Fifth Avenue in Park Slope, and Arsenal Bournemouth was up against Man United Chelsea. Now, what's the marquee fixture there? Obviously, it's Man United Chelsea.
Right.
And in walks this hardcore gooner. He's got a Dennis Bergkamp jersey on, and he looks like he just came out of a back alley in like East London or something like that.
Right.
And he was laying into the bar staff for not putting the volume on the Arsenal
really giving it to them. Really. And this is a Tottenham bar, by the way, too. So they were giving no quarter to this guy.
And then he kept looking over his shoulder at us because we'd been there since the first round of fixtures, and he looked at me, you, and Trevor, and was like, those guys are Spurs fans. They don't care what sound is on. And, of course, then I had to say, well, I'm a Fulham fan, and my friend here is an Arsenal fan, and our friend Trevor is just really terrible at fantasy football. He's actually a Spurs fan. And he turned out to be sort of a reasonable human being, and he collected
his friends. Well, it was a weird mix. It was like there was the reasonable guy and his, like, crazy friend. There was one guy who was like, he was an American with this. I don't know how the two got together. It was like a, crazy kind of, like somebody you'd seen a movie or something. It was like a,
They worked together at the police force.
The quiet, mild-mannered American guy, and the other guy who was out of a Martin Amis novel or something. It was a crazy combination.
So another famous day out for the always cheating crew.
I wish I'd brought in because I've had like a sort of, as we talk about the podcast a lot, too much probably, just a crazy snake bitten season this year. And but the Ozil one, I've got to call myself to the mat for that one, because I think you really just needed. I know he blanked in game week 20, but I really needed him for those two game weeks, and I kind of blew that one. And then game week 20 was a frustrating one because for everyone. So it didn't feel too bad in the end, but it was very frustrating because I went with Jamie Vardy as kind of a. It's weird to call him a differential captain, but given the way that he's performed the last couple of weeks, I think he kind of is.
People were dumping him left and right going into that game week. So I think your logic stands.
I think he's got a little more blame than he deserves for. I mean, honestly, he actually, he should have won the. He was through on goal, in the 25th minute of game week 20 at home to Bournemouth. Definitely should have scored there.
Put it off the post.
Yeah, but off the post. It was a tricky turn. I mean, to be fair, it was a good move to even get free. But then he wins the penalty and then Mahrez misses that penalty. So that one didn't hurt quite as bad because a lot of people captained Mahrez this week. So at least they were stuck with a one pointer, it kind of softened the blow a little bit. But I mean, so Vardy, I mean, I know we'll talk about him a little bit later, but, I mean, he's had a bad run of form, but he hasn't scored in four games. And the Bournemouth game was the only time you really felt like he was off form because, he didn't score in the Liverpool game, but that's away at Anfield. That's a tough place to play. I mean, I know Liverpool has been very up and down, but sometimes they look great under Klopp.
Yeah, hard to make much of that match.
Hard to make much of that one. Next game week, very tough back and forth game with Manchester City. No, there's no shame in not scoring against Man City, right?
Absolutely not.
I mean, and again, they've been giving away some goals, but that was the kind of match neither team wanted to lose that match. So
yeah.
it was like a Mourinho match, you know, just like a draw suited both teams fine.
Yeah.
And then the other match, which is the one I'm forgetting about right now, I think it was
Bournemouth 0-0.
No, I guess it was the week before that. He didn't score the week before that either, but
against Everton.
Yeah, but he had two assists, and so he picked up 8 points. So he has three games with 3 2-pointers. Not fantastic, but the fixtures do get a little bit. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Are you planning to stick with Vardy? I know he's got this groin injury now too, so it's kind of a tricky one.
Yeah, and the word seems to be that he's going to miss the Spurs match in game week 21.
What I've heard today is that he's. So they actually play Spurs back to back. They play them in the FA Cup, and they play them again in the regular.
Oh, okay. So I'm reading about the FA Cup match. Is that what I'm doing?
Yeah. So he's going to miss the Spurs FA Cup match, but he's expected to be back for the Spurs match in the league.
I'm sure a lot of people. Okay, so if you're not playing your wild card right now, which I don't know if you want to talk more about that, but if you're playing your wild card right now, you might be in dire straits. It's probably a little too soon. But unless you're playing your wild card, I'm not sure what to do with Jamie Vardy because I can't. Who I'd really love to bring in for him is Kane, and if I could switch him to Kane, I would do it in a heartbeat.
What about does a Gallo hold an interest for you?
Yes, he does. So that's my one option, and. The concern there is it's too much a like for like, though recent form would show you it's far from it. And Agallo is the man. And he, as listeners of this podcast will know, he's a man that we have ignored for far too long.
Well, we haven't ignored him. We've dismissed him.
Yeah.
And to be fair, he hasn't scored 2 weeks in a row. No, excuse me. He hasn't scored 1 week in a row. Agallo was still rolling. He still has 4 goals in his last 4 games.
He was very close to scoring in that City game too. It's just unreal how good he looks.
Let's do a quick sidebar here about the wild card. Because I've heard there seems to be a little misinformation out there about the wild card. I think because they changed the format this year and you have to use the wild. So for some people already know this, but just in case you don't know, the second half wild card can be used at any point in the season. Right. Throughout the rest of the seasons, you can play the second half wild card in game week 37 if you wanted to.
Used to be you'd lose it after the January transfer window closed.
Exactly, and I've was always amazed when there are people who had the self restraint to not play their other. So you get one wild card. Used to be you get one wild card that you can use at any point, and. Me, you, and everyone we know would use the wild card by like game week 3, right?
Yep.
Like, you know, it's like you always plan to save it as long as possible, and then like game week 3 rolls around, you're like, fuck this. Like,
yep.
Wild card's got to be played.
I totally wild card going into game week 3 this season.
Yeah, exactly, me too. Even though I like swore I wouldn't. Just like load up on Leicester defenders. That was a great
thing. If you haven't played your initial wild card yet, you're not able to keep two wild cards, are you?
You aren't. You had to play the initial wild card by the start of game week 20. Right, so that one's off the table now. But the second wild card can be used at any point in the season, so you don't have to use it in January. And so I'm surprised people are talking about using their wild card yet, because to me, the ideal strategy is to use so if you use a wild card, you can't use a chip the same week.
Right.
So that's something to bear in mind. So if there's a double game week coming up, and you want to load up and use the triple captain or the all out attack or the bench boost.
For those of us who haven't yet used their useless all out attack chip, like right. yours truly.
If you want to use any of those, you actually have to wild card the week before. So that to me is the ideal way to use the wild card is 2 weeks before a big double game week.
Because
then you can load up on all those players. You have them for the week before. It can be a little tricky though, you know, because those double game weeks sometimes fall directly after they've missed a match, right? So,
right.
you know, so there will be definitely some strategy involved. It's gonna be very interesting. I think we'll see a lot of swings the second half of the season.
Might miss a match because of a cup final or a cup semifinal where there will be squad rotation depending on the team,
and so sometimes. you know, bringing players in for a double game week can be tricky because they're not actually playing the week before. So you can only save three transfers. So sometimes you end up with you know, two players on your bench for the double game week who are not going to play. And then you try to save two transfers. You have four players the double game week or something like that. Yeah. So it gets a little tricky. But anyway, the point being, don't use your. I mean, I guess if you want to use a wild card, more power to you. But it feels very early to me to use the wild card. It feels like there are strategic benefits to be gained from waiting until you know, we have a better sense of the lay of the land the last 18 weeks of the season.
I don't know. I view the wild card more like peanut M&Ms, where it's too tempting. It's just far too tempting. I just
really. So are you thinking about wild carding?
Well, let's look at my squad here. Jamie Vardy, as I was saying, is an issue, and me not having Kane. So up front, I have Aguero, Lukaku, and Vardy. I am at an advantage already having Aguero, which apparently by him scoring one-headed goal, he becomes the most must-have player in the game right now.
Kind of a non-factor the whole second half. Scores ahead a goal with like 3 minutes left. You know, I mean, he looked good in the first half.
That was an incredible Twitter sea change, too. Going from everybody tweeting, LOL at all you Aguero owners, you're idiots and all that sort of thing. And after the goal, it immediately becomes in. So when are you planning on bringing him in?
Yeah, that's like a Twitter school that I don't totally understand. Yeah. The like school of people who like go on Twitter to yell at other people for any other players. Uh-huh. Like that just doesn't seem nice to me. It doesn't seem very polite.
Yeah, let's be nicer, everybody.
Like to me, that's not even banter. That's just like you're a, like I, like there was like.
You're trying someone to incite Twitter, a riot, basically.
Yeah, that was like the one time. I don't think we've actually talked about this in the podcast. I think I wanted to, and then I like checked myself. And now it's been so long that I can't remember who tweeted it, so I don't care if I bring it up. But, you know, someone on Twitter was just like, you know, Eden Hazard had like his typical – I think it was when he got subbed off injured, you know, like in the 35th minute – you know, five weeks ago or so.
Right, right.
And this is when I like brought him back in, you know, like just a total disaster. Right. So I punted on him several weeks ago, but I did have him for 2 weeks. And someone was like
forever ago now, Josh.
And someone was like, if you captain or if you brought in Eden Hazard, you deserve this. Like you deserve everything you get. And so I like,
this is like the end of Unforgiven.
It's just like what it was so like personal. It was like, yeah. Grow up, you know, like just like let people make bad decisions. You know, it's like being at a poker table with somebody who wants to like criticize everyone when they make a bad play. It's like,
right.
I know for some people that's like fun, but to me that's just very like it like smacks of insecurity for one thing. It's not very nice, you know, right. Like it's not very nice to be mean to other people, right?
Yeah. So no, I think I agree.
That's not the kind of – that's like I feel like I've been like trying to carefully like unfollow all of the people who do that because I just think, like, you know, anyway, that's neither here nor there.
But to get back to my wild card situation though, I'm looking at my team and I guess my real issue is I am terrified of not having Harry Kane right now. And the only way I can get him in is a -8. And so the question that's is always, true. You're always -8 away from having what you deem a perfect team. So is it worth playing a wild card just to dodge the -8? But the odds are you'll play that wild card. You'll get that person in that you want, and it's not necessarily going to work out exactly as you planned. And now you're out of wild card.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I can understand wanting Kane. It never works, anyways, does it? Like rearranging your whole team for one player's fixture at home. Like, yeah. I feel like that never works. For, like, I don't know. Like, I remember, like, I did a bit of that because I wanted Kane at home to Newcastle. Like 5 weeks ago or so. In the end, it worked out great having Kane, but he did blank.
Great example.
No, but I mean, he blanked that home fixture at Newcastle. So,
oh, right.
I mean,
okay.
You know, it didn't work out.
In the long run, you're saying.
In the long run, yeah. I can see why you want to have Kane, but I mean, burning 8 points for one fixture is too much, I think.
I think a good way for me to reconcile this, though, is the fact that I do have Dele Alli, and that is Kane cover at the moment. So. And as we saw in the last game against Everton, that was excellent coverage, Dele Alli. He's playing so far forward.
He looks. I mean, yeah, he's so lethal as a scorer too.
Yeah,
amazing. Yeah, that was a great pass and a great score.
It was a carbon copy of, I can't remember what match it was, like three or four game weeks ago, Alderweireld to Ali on that midfield pass, trap, shoot, score.
Yep,
amazing combination. Yeah. It's basically the basketball alley-oop equivalent of a goal.
Yeah, Alderweireld really just keeps paying off, doesn't he? I mean, it's really...
I know. What does he cost now, Alderweireld? Is he beyond 6.0?
Yeah, but not too much, I don't think. Let me see. I have it here. He is 6.0 on the dot, on the money, as of today's podcast.
I think that's a fair price.
A fair price for the defender who has gained the most points this season by a solid 8 points over Scott Dan.
If Alderweireld were an Etsy store, I would do business with him again.
Yeah, I was really kicking myself over not bringing in Scott Dan. And then he put up a big zero at home.
I am worried about that Crystal Palace team. Their performance against Chelsea, they look like they were performing like relegation fodder. Now, I know they're missing key players like Bolasie and Kabay, but they looked awful, truly awful.
How is that Crystal Palace team doing it? I guess it's a combination of their defense is really solid, right? I mean, they've got a lot of defenders who are able to do a lot of different things. Like they can score a little bit. They're tough. They've been together for a long time. Papa Soare. And they brought in Kabay, who has definitely kind of opened up that offense. But they have no strikers, and their midfielders are not very consistent at all. I mean, it's really a weird. I mean, Jason Puncheon still has not scored the entire season.
Yeah, it's insane. If he's not scoring, what is Jednak going to be your big gun?
I mean, there's really nobody. I mean, MacArthur is their third highest rated midfielder. I mean, he's brought in more points than any other midfielder except for Bolasie and Kabay, and he has 2 goals and 2 assists on the season. So I don't know where it's coming from. It's all the defenders, really.
Right. So they score 2 goals in the 3 weeks during the festive period, and I'll be curious to see what they look like when they eventually get Kabay and Bolasie back, but if they continue this form, I don't know, I'd be interested to pick Aston Villa to pick up a much-needed win against Palace in Game Week 21. But I shouldn't get into Game Week 21, because here's what we want to do this podcast, which we're already knee-deep in it. first, we should catch everybody up on where we are in the Hail Cheaters mini-league, because it's been a while since we reviewed it. But then we're going to do is...
You and I are. We're too far down. But where the league stands.
Before we started recording, you were concerned, like, do you think anyone's looking up where we are in the Hail Cheaters League? And my response was, I'm not worried about it, because people generally don't have the patience to click through more than 2 or 3 pages of mini league. They only show 50 at a time.
That's true. You look at the first page, maybe the second page, you move on.
So then we've got a pick three for three. So we're going to go game week 18, 19, 20, pick three highlighted fixtures, and basically tell the story of the festive fixtures through those highlights. And then we've got a lot of questions from you through Facebook and Twitter that we'll get to. So
that's
you
right. We're going to save we're going to preview game weeks 21 and 22 together. We're going to do an early podcast because the next game week, it's obviously an FA Cup weekend this weekend, but then we're going to put up a podcast hopefully on Sunday night that previews the next two fixtures.
Yeah, I know this is a game week that tends to take people off guard. You feel like you have the weekend off, and then boom, suddenly it's like Tuesday afternoon and you realize you didn't set your team.
That's true.
So, yeah, we'll come back at you with a new pod where we optimize for game week 21. Do you want to get us into the Hail Cheaters mini league, though, Josh?
Yeah, let's do it. So we have many of the usual suspects are still in the top 10. I think, so we'll see. Triple Captain Hazard, game week 1, after falling a little bit, is back up into first place. His 2-point lead over one of Sushan Garb's many teams, Pinky
the
and Brain.
The best of his many teams.
The best of his many teams is in second place. And
I
then,
think I may like the Sushant team the best as well.
Yeah, we should do a Sushant look where we just
we should have a Sushant mini league.
We should have Sushant on the podcast, actually. Sushant, if you have a good speaker, let us know. We'll have you in the podcast talk about your many teams.
Wouldn't that be crazy if it turned out we were hosting like five different Sushants on one episode?
That's true. Oh, wouldn't that be amazing if there were three?
It'd be like that movie where Michael Keaton multiplies himself.
Multiplicity?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, it would be. So in third place is United of Horns, Muhammad Al-Qiyasi. I hope I said that right. I probably did not say that right, considering I said it like four different ways. he was further up, moved down to third place, and he's actually tied for third with Colin Bothwell, who both have 1199. And then Egan O'Keefe is in fifth, and that's Sean Comiskey in sixth, Brian White in seventh, Guillermeld in eighth, Laith Kebab in ninth, and Mitchell Bathurst Challenge Everything in tenth.
I love that team name. There's no pun happening there, but Challenge Everything. I
like to think of him at Mitchell Bathurst's Challenge. I like maybe he is a big NFL fan, and he loves right. when they challenge a catch on the field or whether there was a fumble or not. He says, challenge everything. Go for it.
Now, there's absolutely no way a challenge flag would work in the Premier League or in professional soccer, I'm assuming.
I hope not, because American sports are convinced that the best way to enjoy a sport is to spend like a good third of the time making sure that you have all the rules right. We're such a rules-obsessed country. You know, I mean, the beauty of the Premier League, it's indescribable. Like if you're talking to somebody who grew up watching the Premier League, or you know, they grew up in the UK or in Europe or wherever, and they grew up watching football matches, soccer matches, what it's like to watch sports in America. I mean, most sports are 3 to 4 hours long, and they're in most of the time they're debating the rules. And they're like football is
or going to commercial.
I mean, I like football. I like NFL football, and I like college football. But I mean, most of the game is spent with the referees conferring and like deciding how big of a penalty it is. And you know, it's very tedious.
Or college basketball, where their favorite thing to do is go to the replay to see how many eighths of a second they need to add back onto the clock, the game clock.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so they talk about adding this to the Premier League sometimes. Oh, like everything should be reviewable. Like, was it a penalty? Wasn't a penalty? I mean, who wants that? Who wants 4 minutes of a ref like huddled in a corner, like watching video screens and trying to decide if the guy dove or was, you know, it's just, it sounds very tedious to me.
Yeah. Well, kudos to everyone in the Hail Cheaters mini league.
I'm ranting all over the place. I think I was, you know, I haven't.
You're like Lewis Black today.
I know. I think I haven't had a microphone in front of me for a while, you know, so it's all coming out.
So it's like between fifth and first place, it's separated by 10 points. So it's a really close up there at the top.
I know it is exciting. And a lot of these people are on Twitter or on our Facebook page. I feel like people have been commenting on Facebook a little more too, which is kind of nice. We're starting
That's awesome.
Yeah, I like the idea of building like an anti community there, where it's basically it's not that we're talking.
What
strategy,
does that mean?
It's just a place where people go to post like good videos and bad photoshops and stuff like that. I want it to be like a bang bang, like you pop on, you watch something kind of funny or click on a good link and then you're out, you know?
Speaking of, if anyone has missed your fantastic Captain Rom Photoshop, you have to go to our Facebook page and check it out.
Yeah, Brendan, I asked to like Mitchell Maynard. Created the Forgetting Anthony Marshall poster, which is really – it's actually a pretty good Photoshop job.
Yeah, it's way better than yours.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. You can see like Jamie Vardy's head actually fits on
Russell Brand's body.
Yeah, Russell Brand's body really well.
Famous West Ham fan.
Oh, is that right? Is he?
Yeah, he's a huge West Ham fan.
So, go and check out some bad Photoshop jobs and feel free to submit your own as well.
So, yeah, check that out. And you can still join the mini league. As you know, the code is on our website at alwayscheating.com. Okay, so we've got a lot of games to review here, going all the way back to the beginning of the festive period, game week 18. And There were some really interesting results that happened. The first one we'll pick out is Liverpool versus Leicester, 1-0. This is, of course, the end of Leicester's storied run at the top of the league table. I think we were saying there's really not much we can make of this result, the one way or another. It didn't really tell us, as we know in hindsight, didn't tell us much about Liverpool. Maybe it told us a little bit about the form that Leicester is starting to be on.
Yeah, I don't really know what you could. I mean, Liverpool. It's impossible to draw any conclusions about Liverpool at the moment because. They're just all over the place. I mean, there's no consistency there with them. I mean, they're in their last six matches, Liverpool have they've won two, drawn one, and lost three. And they won two consecutive matches 1-0. They won at home to Leicester 1-0, away to Sunderland 1-0. And then, which you and I both missed, actually. We went to see the Hateful Eight.
Yeah, we needed a break.
Yeah.
Of course, that was the fixture that knocked me out of the FPL Cup, because the ghost team that I was playing had Benteke, and his goal kicked me out of the cup.
Losing to a ghost team is a very painful thing.
I mean, but losing in the cup, it happens to everybody. Does anybody survive week two of the cup?
I don't know if I've ever made it.
Is happening anymore.
I think I made it to week three once. Like that's about as far as I've gone. I think I'm going to play in the fantasy football scout cup this year. And that's like my one, like the last thing I can possibly win this year.
You could use a good cup run, man.
Yeah, exactly. So they're all over the place.
Yeah, and they just looked really dire against West Ham. So it was sort of like things were looking up, up, up for them, and now they're back almost behind square one. I mean, their defense is in tatters, even though I guess Lucas had a really good game in central defense in their cup match today against Stoke, and they did beat Stoke 1-0. But they're missing Skrtel. Now Lovren is out with a hamstring. Coutinho has a hamstring.
Yeah, it's you just have to kind of – it's like this season's just a punt for them, right? I mean, the thing is, if they actually beat West Ham, I think they would be – they would have been at least kind of approaching those Europa League spots. I mean, because, the league is so up and down right now that they would have been three wins in a row. And so, they would have picked up 9 points.
Yeah, they'd be level with United at this point.
Yeah, so it was so they're not – it's not that they're completely out of it. It just feels that way because their losses are so bad.
Yeah,
you know,
and Klopp seems to take them so seriously.
Yeah, and so it's from a fantasy perspective to bring it back to the topic of
our reason of for record. Existence.
Our reasons for existence. I mean, you get excited for 2 weeks about the clean sheets. You and actually both of us dropped our defenders. I had to because of Skrtel's injury, and then you brought in.
I brought in Glenn Johnson for Nathaniel Klein, which hasn't quite paid off yet.
Yeah. Oh, so have you had Johnson for 2 weeks now?
Yeah, I have had him for 2 weeks.
Okay, so you picked up you didn't pick up anything, right?
No, they let in three against Everton, and then they lost the cleanie against West Brom as well, letting two there. So, I mean, he had a couple looks at goal, which is encouraging.
Did you start him for that match away at Everton?
Yes, I did. Why did I do that? Because who else did I have in my defense? I had to sit Robert Huth against Man City, which of course Huth got a clean sheet. Right. So then I started Van Dijk against West Ham. I started Nathan Dyer against Watford. No, a clean sheet wipe out there. And Glenn Johnson. You know, it goes back to. What I've always harped on is you have to go with attacking potential.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a weird year for clean sheets. I mean, I guess maybe it always is. And yeah, I mean, like you brought up the Southampton West Ham game. I mean, I ended up starting Van Dijk 3 weeks in a row. He was actually on my bench for the Arsenal match. And then he came in, So I just had a charmed week, and so he could. Oh, I think I tried to play Micah Richards away to Norwich. That's what happened. Richards didn't play, so I was able to bring in Van Dijk. And so inexplicably, the one clean sheet I got for Van Dijk out of this really nice run of Norwich West. You know, I mean, that West Ham team is really not they're not playing with a full complement of players at the moment. Mm-hmm. So I thought, yeah, I could probably pick up a clean sheet there, and I could probably pick up a clean sheet away at Norwich. And of course, of those three matches, the only one I picked up a clean sheet was the Arsenal match. And he almost scored in that match too. I mean, he actually did score, but they called it offside.
Yeah,
offside. Pretty close one, I thought.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to talk about Leicester a little more in game week 19 when we get to the Man City match. But speaking of Man City, game week 18 probably saw their most crucial fantasy point game against Sunderland, where De Bruyne had a classic big point haul sandwiched between no points.
Yeah, it was.
This is a huge week for you if you're a De Bruyne owner. And you have to be very happy. And of course, I immediately, having cast him off on a life raft, brought De Bruyne back into my squad after this game. And it's same old crap from him.
Yeah, this was the moment in game week 19 where we're watching the December 28th matches together, and I'm doing my usual complaining as watching sports with me is really an unpleasant experience for everyone, myself included. I mean, it's just a running commentary on how much everything sucks.
Yeah,
it's all muttered though. I mentioned before, I'm not yelling. Like,
imagine if Charlie Kaufman were a sports fan. It's basically you.
I'm just quietly complaining for 2 hours, like kind of to myself. I'm reading my phone the whole time too. I'm watching like six games at once. I'm reading my phone the entire time. Yeah. I'm usually eating and drinking like at the same time too, like with like both hands. It requires a lot of energy. I'm always wiped out after going to watch a soccer match. It's almost worse when I'm home alone because I've got like I do the TV and then the picture-in-picture and then sure. I'm usually the one running the Always Cheating Twitter feed. I'm posting constantly.
Well,
during the matches.
And when you're at home, there's no shame because there's no one around you to sort of rein you in. So I know when I'm home alone, I say some very, very awful, crude things to the television.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it can be fun. Like it's its own watching alone is its own joy.
Okay, so you were driving at a point here.
Yes, I was driving at a point, and I actually lost. I lost the point. I lost the plot.
Well, I was talking about. We were talking about Kevin De Bruyne, which we had a.
Oh, right.
We had a good question from Scott Gillishannon on Twitter, and he says, "Is KDB the new Barkley? 16 1 week, and then two the next 2 weeks." And this made me laugh because it is actually an incredibly insightful comment, and I have to agree. I mean, I'm not saying it's necessarily bad or good, but yes, this is exactly what Barkley does.
Yeah, I was going to say that he was a little more explosive than Barkley, but I actually don't think that's true.
De Bruyne is definitely a better player than Ross Barkley probably will ever be.
Yeah, Barkley has three double-digit point hauls in the season, and then one, two, three other weeks where he brought in 9 points. De Bruyne has four double-digit point hauls in the week, and then one with seven. And then other than that, it's a bunch of twos and ones. I mean, he's incredibly mercurial. Yeah. I mean, you knew he was going to go off in that Sunderland match because he was the best. He was one of the best players in the pitch in the Arsenal match. After Mesut Ozil, he was arguably the best player in the pitch in that match. And he was running a lot. You know, he was running all over the place. Just barely missed a goal, but he was setting people up. And if Aguero had been at full strength, I think Man City could have won that game. But he goes off in that match, and then it's home and away with him. You know, I mean, he's yeah. always a player worth captaining at home. I think all four of his double digit point hauls have come at home. I'm double checking, and that is true. So, you know, always a captain option at home. He's very expensive is the problem. I mean, you know, you get basically the same returns from Barkley for $3.5 million cheaper.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. This period of three games is definitely proof in the pudding of Man City's home and away form. The 4-1 victory over Sunderland at home and then two away matches to come. They failed to score against Leicester, and then they barely eked out that 2-1 victory against Watford.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next match, Southampton v. Arsenal, this is called out just for the anomaly that it was. I didn't even watch this game. What happened? Arsenal just didn't show up.
They just didn't show up. It was a weird. I mean, they never really even threatened. I mean, it was a strange match because it was never in doubt. I mean, Southampton just, you know, had him by the leash the whole time. I mean, really, Shane Long has played very well. You know, we were pulling stats earlier today just so we'd have some at the ready for this podcast. And you know, he picked up. I guess he only picked up two goals over the last four game weeks, but it just feels like he's been very involved in the play. If you actually watch these matches, I mean, I really think he was the difference maker that Southampton needed. I think because Pelé just has completely lost form. I mean, to the point where I thought he may be injured. I mean, he's got a
knee injury, which is apparently keeping him out. But it's one of those cases you do wonder if the injury is being embellished a little bit just to. For his own confidence sake. Yeah,
exactly. that could be.
But
yeah.
I don't know. I'm totally reading into it. But, okay, I mean, so this is a crazy result, but...
I mean, Southampton's win is sandwiched around two losses on either side. I mean, in their last six matches, they picked up 3 points total, and it was this one... So I think it was just one of those matches. I mean, every year, even a team that wins the league is going to have a howler or two, and I just think that, you know, I mean, Arsenal came back and they looked pretty good the last two game weeks, especially against Bournemouth. So, you know, I think it was just a blip. I think that Southampton players are still players not worth owning, even defensively, I would argue.
We both still have Van Dijk in our defense, and he's turning into one of those defenders you can't really squeeze out of your back line.
They're at home to Watford and West Brom in the next two game weeks, so now is not quite the right time to sell. But then they're away to Arsenal and Man United in game weeks 23 and 24. So if I still have Van Dijk, that's certainly when he's going to go.
Yeah, I saw Bertrand bouncing around some of the forums as the guy to pick up. But I agree.
A little more attacking threat from Bertrand. I mean, I know that Van Dijk has scored a couple goals this year, but Bertrand is a little – he's kind of like Danny Rose. You know, he's really, really involved in the play.
Yeah, yeah. One fixture I didn't pick out but is interesting to talk about is Stoke totally pasting Man United 2-0. Arnautovic continuing his amazing run of just showboating across the league, and Bojan with another goal there.
Yeah, and someone FPL Booster asked us on Twitter and said, Arnie, is he still in the game or out? I think he is. I think that was just a weird... It's funny because like 10 weeks ago, it would not have been all that crazy for a team to just get totally stymied at home to West Brom, right? I mean, that's kind of a hallmark Tony Pulis defensive.
Yes, and Pulis had a lot at stake there because Stoke is where he made his name.
So did you drop Michael Dawson? Is that what happened?
What did I do to my team? Oh, okay. So it was Glenn Johnson and Eric Dyer in for... Dawson and Klein. Yeah.
Okay, right.
I mean, West Brom just hasn't been getting it done with the clean sheets. And let's see, did they kept a clean sheet against Newcastle, but then they let one in against Swansea. So that's one clean sheet out of three. The only conceivable reason to invest in West Brom is for a clean sheet.
That is true, yes.
And now coming up, they're away to Chelsea, they're away to Southampton, then they do host Villa. So they're Villa, then Swansea. So there's a reason to maybe get back on that bandwagon. Villa, Swansea, Newcastle.
Yeah, but to get back to the Stoke question about Arnautovic, I definitely don't think it's... I think it's still a yay on Arnautovic, especially for their next match. Stoke is at home to Norwich. And then even that match at home to Arsenal, I think, is a match where you could see something from Arnautovic. I mean, they've looked really good. Arnautovic in particular has looked very good at home to top teams this year.
Yeah.
You know, we saw it against Man United, and we saw it against Manchester City. And I do not think they'll be scared going into that match. And then the next match is away to Leicester, which could also see some goals. So I think the next three fixtures are all set up pretty nicely for Arnautovic. And if anything, the fact that he wasn't able to do anything. Actually, I think he had a one pointer this weekend. Because I think he picked up a yellow card.
He did.
It slows his momentum a little bit, so it makes him a little more of a differential. So I think he's definitely one of the. So Jerry D is leaving my team this week. Finally, mercifully, right. He and his six phantom not counted assists are leaving my team, and so I'm sort of debating. I'm sort of debating between Arnautovic and Payet right now, and yeah. I guess because we are jumping around here a little bit. But there were a lot of questions, including from Trevor Ingerson. It says, when do you bring Payet back in? What's your thoughts on the Payet thing? How are you feeling about Payet?
Well, I'm one that
FPL Junior also asked us about Payet coming back.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, particularly for me, because I held off bringing Payet into my team early in the season, and it was a big mistake to not get those points. And now that he's coming back, I have an opportunity to get back in on the ground floor. And those 30 minutes that he played over the weekend, he was doing Cruyff turns. He looked amazing. It looked like he hadn't lost a step.
Yeah.
And it's very tempting to bring him in. But, of course, that's just on the basis of 30 minutes. And coming back from injury for a lot of these top players can be a very hard thing to do if they're even able to accomplish it. You were comparing him to David Silva, who's been playing on a bum ankle for 3 years now.
Yeah, an ankle injury can be can be the kind of injury that really sticks with a player and can definitely rob them of some of their creativity. So the question I would like to see him not start an FA Cup match this weekend. I'd be a little worried about him starting. If he started, because the way the FA Cup is shaping up, there's the FA Cup this weekend, and then there's the midweek game week, and there's another game week, a few days after that. So do I think that Payet could play 90 minutes three times in 8 days? I don't. So if he came on in like the 60th minute in the FA Cup this weekend, I'd actually feel better about his chances of starting two matches in five right. days or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm a little on the fence about it right now.
If you're West Ham, you have to be far more bullish about your chances to get a Europa League spot as opposed to go the cup run.
Yeah, I mean, and they're away to Bournemouth and Newcastle in the next two game weeks. I mean, they're a very good chance. They're home to Man City, and then they're home to Aston Villa after that. So
yeah.
Let's say even if they lose that Man City match, there's a really good chance for them to pick up 9 points in the next.
Yeah.
In the next four game weeks. Yeah. I mean, there's at least a shot, I think, that they have they would need everyone to come back healthy, but I think they could really hang around the periphery of the Champions League spots.
Yeah.
The rest of the season. I mean, I don't know if they quite have the squad depth, but Andy Carroll, like the kind of joke player that he is, joke player, mostly because he looks like a joke. I mean, really the problem with him is,
no,
is
he is a injuries. Joke player.
He can be very good when healthy. I mean, he's never healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Andy Carroll is, I don't know what you can really expect from him. I mean, from a fantasy perspective, I can't imagine bringing Andy Carroll in, even though his price is pretty low. But, God, wouldn't it be fun getting Andy Carroll? Maybe you should be looking at him, Brandon, for your Jimmy Vardy replacement.
Yeah,
it would be a crazy punt. Away to Bournemouth and Newcastle the next two game weeks, you could definitely see a couple goals from Carroll in those matches.
Yeah, and he'll be up for a match against his former team, Newcastle.
Yeah, it's true. Because someone on Twitter was asking about differential midfielders, and they were really pulling for Willian as a differential midfielder, which does make sense. And I said, well, what about Payet? He said, well, I just think everyone's going to own him soon. And so he doesn't really work as a differential. And I suppose that is true. I mean, I didn't realize there'd be such a clamor for Payet. I thought people would kind of forget about him. You know, I mean, he's been out for how long? You know, I mean,
and West Ham has not been a terribly sexy team since he left. They've been having a lot of injury troubles in the midfield and up front. And yeah, I think the bigger question is Les Piatt and what can this West Ham team actually do?
Yeah, he's really the whole key to their attack. So, you know, he had 5 goals and 4 assists in the first 11 game weeks. We don't count the 12th game week where James McCarthy like systematically destroyed him. not from a technical perspective, but from a like I'm going to keep kicking you until you like are injured perspective.
Right. Speaking of Chelsea, though, another midfield differential, and it's a little knee-jerky given his performance all season, but Oscar looked really good. He looked like the good Oscar against Crystal Palace. Now, granted, I was saying, Crystal Palace looked like an absolute dog pile.
It's always going to be tough for me. I just loathe Oscar. I don't know. I can't. Maybe it's just his fate. I mean, like it's like weirdly personal with me and Oscar. Like there's no. I mean that and the fact that I feel like I've owned Oscar. Like I keep saying Oscar instead of Oscar. Like
Oscar it sounds like a Norse god.
Oscar the Grouch.
Oscar the Grouch.
Oscar the Norse the Norwegian Grouch.
I like it.
I have owned Oscar for probably. I don't know, he's been in the league for, 3 years now or something like that. I've probably owned him for, 40 total game weeks, you know, over the course of the last 3 years. Maybe let's say, 35. I'll round down a little bit.
Right.
He is – in those 35 weeks, I think I've – total number of points I've picked up from Oscar over 35 weeks is about minus 3 points. I think that's conservative.
How many times was he stretchered off the field during that time?
I think it was something like it's like 30 zeros and then -1 like 3 times and then like an assist once. So yeah. I think that was out to about -3. Right. I don't know, it just like never works with me and Oscar, and I don't like his style. Like he's got that kind of it's sort of like Ozil without the talent, you know, where like it looks like he's not doing anything in the match. Yeah. I think he stinks on free kicks and takes too many of them, and yeah. I'm just not a fan, you know. So take my Oscar complaints with a grain of salt.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to Stoke real quick, because going into game week 19, the most fun we had watching a game, I think anybody had watching a game, maybe save the Everton Spurs match, was Everton versus Stoke, 3-4, taken down to the wire with that crazy John Stones penalty at the very end.
Kind of a perfect storm for Everton in this match. Losing, finally get McCarthy back, and then he has an assist, and then he immediately has to go for an injury. They bring in their backup kind of holding midfielder in Tom Cleverley. He gets an assist and then is immediately taken off with injury.
Right.
It was a very strange match. So they basically didn't have any defensive midfielders. Or not even defensive midfielders exactly, but just like anyone, because Gareth Barry is their proper defensive midfielder, but just no one in the center of the pitch who could kind of boss things around and link up.
Yeah, no proper link play, right?
Yeah, exactly. So without that link play, it was they really got exposed by Stoke, and I was actually surprised you didn't see more of that in the. Not to move to the next game week already, but I suppose you didn't see more of that in the Spurs match. I thought they would lose that Spurs match.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did, which was – it was strange. I mean, it was strange. The consensus going into that match was bench Dele Alli, bench your Spurs defenders against Everton. I think everyone was just expecting a wide-open game and to be free scoring. And that Barkley would ultimately win out there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So the predictions were really strange. I figured Spurs would be way favored in that match. But then the result came to 1-1. Even though it was a great game, not much came of it.
But, yeah, I agree. But back to Everton Stoke. I mean, there was – I don't know how you – like, you kind of want to be part of the Stoke – attack right now, like just you want to, it'd be fun to have a player, one of those two midfielders. I mean, there's Arnautovic, who's kind of the obvious player to pick up, and then
he's got the hot hand.
Yeah, and then there's the sort of fun differential in Shaqiri, who could end up being as valuable as Arnautovic over the long run.
Right.
I mean, Shaqiri picked up, two goals in that match. Actually, his first two goals of the season for Stoke, away to Everton, and didn't really do anything the next match. So it's hard to really know.
Right.
Let me ask you this, Brandon. Arnautovic, Shaqiri, same price, $6.7 million. Okay. Big points lead for Arnautovic so far in the season, 96-59, a 37-point lead. Over the final 18 weeks of the season, if you started over, started from scratch, 0 points each, who scores more points by the end of the season, Arnautovic or Shaqiri?
Arnautovic, hands down.
You think
down.
So?
Absolutely.
Hands down.
Absolutely.
Your hands are down.
Yeah, I'm basically touching the floor right now with my right hand. I can't actually touch. So that's the best I can do. But my hands are down. No, I'm going to Arnie. I'm the man bun. It's the man bun. I think he's the one that looks more direct. Shaqiri tends to play out wide. He likes to give. Service. He's more a passer of the ball. Arnautovic, he's looking for the strike.
Yeah,
and he's.
I'm not sure that I disagree with you. I mean, I know I kind of set it up like I was going to disagree with you. I mean, I do think that – I think it could be close, though. I don't think he'll be 37 points ahead over the second half of the season.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Now, here's the third option, Bojan, 5.1 for a forward who's starting for this attacking triumvirate.
Yeah,
is there any temptation there? He's got two goals and two assists in the last four matches. At 5.1, that's a bargain.
It is a bargain. That's true. I mean, maybe. I mean, it's definitely something to think about. There are so many good cheap midfielders that, good cheap forwards that he's less tempting than he might be in a normal season. In a normal season where maybe you've got your two 12 million strikers. And you want a cheap third option, I think he'd be more valuable. The real issue with Bojan is he doesn't always play 60 minutes. He got the full 90 three game weeks in a row, 15, game week 16 through 18, but then he's played 63 minutes exactly the last two game weeks. And then before that it was 71, 49, 70, 70, 59. He does play well when he plays, but he's not often. It's always a little unappealing to bring in a striker who isn't going to be playing a whole match. It's not fun as a fan. This is the part of the Deulofeu problem is that if you don't get anything from him in the first half, you're like, oh, crap. The second half starting, you're like, well, I've got like 15 minutes for him to score because I know they're going to take him off at like the 63rd minute.
Right. Right, right. So let's talk about Watford real quick. They played in game week 19 against Spurs, and they lost 1-2 on a late goal by Son.
Yeah.
A great back heel.
Yeah, if Spurs were unlucky to draw at Everton, they were certainly lucky to win this match. I mean, it was a crazy goal by Son. I mean, I guess he meant it.
He meant it.
He did mean it, but it's amazing that it went in. I mean, he was – back to goal, and he basically kicked the ball behind him,
Very much like the Rooney goal the following week.
It is very much like the Rooney goal. Yeah, weird that it happened 2 weeks in a row. And in both cases, it won a tight 1-1 match.
Yeah.
I think Gallo picked up another goal.
He did. He just basically walked through Eric Dier, like Eric Dier was some sort of ghost apparition. It's incredible time and time again how Agallo in tight quarters is able to bring a ball down, control it, and simultaneously outmuscle these heavy duty defenders.
So he doesn't get any points in game week 20, but then when you look at Agallo the next four game weeks, it's away to Southampton, which shouldn't scare them. Away to Swansea, same thing, although Swansea's defense has looked a lot better the last few game weeks. Home to Newcastle, home to Chelsea. I think there's a very good chance that he scores in three out of four of those matches.
Yeah. That is the question of the optimizer, which we will discuss in our next pod, is Vardy to Igalo, is that the right move? Think about that.
Yeah, ponder. for the
next few days.
Yeah, watch your FA Cup matches and ponder.
From a non-fantasy perspective, though, this was an interesting result for Spurs in that Spurs is making a bit of a title run right now. And this late winner showed the real grit and determination that they have. I feel like earlier in the season, they would have drawn a game like this. And now you can start to see the belief in that team, that they're winners.
Yeah. So it's easily the most entertaining Spurs team since Gareth Bale left.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, without a doubt. It all seems to be coming together for them a little bit. And in classic Spursian irony, it's also the season when everything's coming together for Arsenal. You know, yeah. It's like they finally they finally put together this team that could like maybe possibly win the league. Yeah. And then Arsenal has finally put together their version of that same team, and it's like 6 points better right now.
Well, if Spurs continues the trajectory, they'll be title favorites next season, I think.
Well,
assuming one of these big clubs doesn't scoop up a bunch of La Liga stars or something.
It still feels like there are big holes in this Spurs team, right? I mean, the team is entirely too dependent on Moussa Dembélé, for one thing. yeah. I mean, he's really, like, without him, they just aren't the same. They're not nearly as strong, and they really don't have a lot of attackers. Christian Eriksen, so I was thinking about the Spurs team when I was watching the Spurs-Everton match. I mean, Eric Lamella, and I was complaining about this on Twitter a little bit, maybe because
I know you were complaining because you had captain. You didn't Harry captain Kane, but you wanted Kane to get service.
I needed some points from Kane.
Yeah.
I mean, Eric Lamella can barely string a pass together. And I mean, he's too central to like a team with Eric Lamella that central to its attack. I don't know if they can really win the league. I mean, yeah. Lamella is a very inconsistent. I know he scored last week. He scored in this Watford match on a Harry Kane flick. He can do certain things. You know, he can run. He's kind of like Theo Walcott, right? Like he's inconsistent. Comparison. Yeah, he's not quite as good, I will say, but he does a lot of the same things. But Theo Walcott is maybe, a full-strength Arsenal, which is like never happened. But let's just say you had a full-strength Arsenal. Even Arsenal right now, when they have a lot of injuries, Theo Walcott is maybe like their sixth or seventh most important player, right? I mean, right, you'd rank him below Aaron Ramsey and Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil.
Francis Coquelin. Probably.
Francis Coquelin, a couple of the defenders, Olivier Giroud, Peter Cech. I mean, he's like, and then starting at 11, he's like, it's like he and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain are, it's like, pick one or the other, you know? I mean, you know, it's not.
No, do not pick the Ox.
Okay, Ox can't score. Who is the bigger force field around goal? Is it Jesus Navas or Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain? I mean, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has hit the post like 16 times this year. I mean, the guy cannot. I don't know if you've ever heard him talk. He seems like a pretty intelligent guy, and I think he's just thinking too much out there. You know, you can see him just agonizing. You know, he can't put it together. Yeah. But back to Eric Lamella. I mean, so Eric Lamella he's too important to that team, and they need to become better just so they can push him down the pecking order. If he's an option that doesn't need to play every week, or he's a player who is like more of like a release valve, you know, does he play in the right? I guess he plays it. I mean, I'm surprised that Son isn't playing over Lamella.
I agree. I mean, when the talk is maybe we can bring in Berahino to be a replacement for Harry Kane if he gets injured, that to me makes me agree with you that these guys aren't title contenders.
Yeah.
Berahino has fell off the map.
It's hard to know how much of that's the Tony Pulis thing. I think Berahino and Kane could play together. I mean, I just think that like anyone can play with Kane, though. I mean, I cannot believe what a versatile player he is.
He does seem like a great teammate too.
He's like he's playing like mid career Wayne Rooney. I know he's not scoring. I mean, he's not as talented of a striker as Wayne Rooney was at his best. But his ability to move from the center of the attack all the way back to the defense, you know, win the ball, start the attack, you know, go. I mean, just he's all over the pitch, and he's a really complete player. He's much better than I thought he was.
Going into
the season.
Right. All right. So let's round out game week 19. We had a 0-0 draw with United and Chelsea. That was thrillless. And then another 0-0 draw with Leicester and Man City. We kind of touched upon this match. This was a classic, completely disappointing Man City performance. I mean, all of the fantasy assets failed to perform. Even Kolarov, though he got a clean sheet, ends up with a yellow card. De Bruyne gets a yellow card as well. They look totally listless. Classic Yaya Toure, completely invisible in the middle of the park. A performance that tells you exactly why Manchester City is not going to challenge in the Champions League anytime soon.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, they could still win the league this year, but it's hard to see them playing, Real Madrid or Bayern Munich or something and winning that match.
But of course,
Yaya Toure is so infuriating, right? I mean, God.
Let's talk about game week 20, where they go 2-1 against Watford. They pull it out at the end. And again, Yaya Toure completely absent for the entire game and nonchalantly scores a wild volley on a corner kick to bring the team back into it. And suddenly he thinks he's a saint in Manchester.
You know, he is truly undervalued as a fantasy asset. I mean, it's talk about differential. I mean, I know that his ownership can't be that low because Man City is a popular enough club and he's a famous
17.1% ownership, which is pretty high.
Which is actually pretty high. But if you look at his returns the last five game weeks, 7-9-9-3-9. He's I don't know. I mean, you can't say that he's in good form if you watch him play because he's kind of all over the place in terms of what he's but he is delivering.
But if you want to save money and drop KDB, clearly over the last few weeks, you would have done better.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, even someone like me, I can't quite afford him I can't quite bring Del Feo in for or bring Yaya. The problem is Yaya, his reputation precedes him. So he is at
8.7.
He's still at 8.7. He's pretty expensive given his lack of performance on the season. I mean, 6 goals and 4 assists, which isn't terrible exactly. I mean, it's not like he's playing as a striker most. He's not playing that far forward a lot of the time. But
pull up his profile picture in the fantasy game. He's giving that knowing look of like, I'm a jerk. You know it.
I mean, he scores 2 goals in the first game week. And I mean, I think his ownership percentage is, I wonder how many of that is like how many, like we should go to the fantasy football. Yeah. By the way, someone was touting or recommending that we use Fantasy Football Fix more often on the Twitter feed. And it is true. It's a really useful site, but you can also pick out dead teams on there. And I'd be curious how many, because Yaya Toure is such a strong start of the season that I think a lot of people picked him up.
Right.
I don't know how many people have brought him in the last. I mean, I guess they've been bringing him in a little bit more the last 3 game weeks. But in game week 14, 35,000 people transfer him out. Game week 15, 93,000 people transfer him out. Game week 16, 30,000 more. So he lost, 150,000 people in the last 6 game weeks.
Yeah.
So, the point is he's probably a little undervalued at 8.7 million.
The big headline from this game, though, is Sergio Aguero finally scores a goal and all of Twitter explodes with, when do we get him in? Twitter was basically tearing him down for 85 minutes or thereabouts.
Well, let's get right into it. I mean, this is a question that, FPL Junior said, is it time for Kun? What do you think? And then I'm going to bundle this with another question because we're talking about it. Chris Morin said, is Aguero essential as a Vardy replacement? Right? So this is assuming that you need to replace Vardy. Do you want to bring in Aguero? Okay. If your other strikers are Kane and Lukaku, is it worth a -8? So this is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, get a Gallo. So this is something we've already kind of touched on a little bit in the podcast. I still don't think he's essential. What do you think?
It was a very good goal. It was a very good goal, and he's clearly very hungry out there on the field. He's the opposite of what we were saying about Yaya Toure. Even when the chips are down, Aguero is—he has that Luis Suarez quality, not to that level of "I'll live or die, whether we win or lose."
Let me ask you this, Brandon: If he doesn't score that goal in the 87th minute, are you transferring him out for Harry Kane this game week?
I don't know. I just had such a long road with Aguero, and I feel like I've sort of staked a lot on keeping him in my squad and waiting it out.
Because, I mean, since you brought him in Game Week 14, he has scored
Goal against Liverpool.
2 points, 0 points, 0 points, 2 points, 0 points, 2 points, 9 points.
I probably wouldn't ship him out. I've managed to not feel that too much because my midfield has been performing well enough to keep me in the mix. And given the fact that there are so many budget options out there, my team is pretty free to let 13 million sit on the bench for a few weeks. I mean,
fair enough.
It could sound ridiculous to say, and it does sound ridiculous to say, but you're not completely reworking your team to get Aguero in at this point. And I really haven't had a major issue waiting for him to turn on. And
the issue is he turning on? I mean, he is a striker. Strikers score goals, right? This is like, like if you don't like, you know, even Pelé is capable of a 9 point game every now and then, you know, I mean,
yeah, this is not a magic moment where Aguero scores a goal and the black and white world turns into Technicolor.
Yeah. I mean, so in order to move Vardy to Aguero, you need to free up about 6 million, which most people won't be able to do already, right? I mean, it's probably going to take 2 transfers. And you also have to decide whether he is better than all of the other alternatives. So, you know, in this case, he says, Chris Morin says, you know, his other strikers are Kane and Lukaku. And I guess Kane, Lukaku, and Aguero could be kind of the new template. But, I mean, is there anyone else? I mean, you know, Brandon, you mentioned Andy Carroll earlier as someone you're really seriously
Andy Carroll
looking at.
Or I mean, Andy Carroll or Bojan, definitely two guys that can meet the returns of Sergio Aguero.
Anthony Martial is coming into form a little bit. He's kind of an interesting option.
He is. Or Mo Bacani scored a couple. Big Mo.
Day of Mercy, Mo Bacani. I think Agallo is still the move I would be making right now if I were taking out Jamie Vardy.
Yeah, there's no way you want to burn 8 points. I mean, Aguero is not yet in scorching form, so to lose 8 points on a guy who, a law of averages would say, will maybe get you 5 points next week.
I mean, it's just like the guy has a history of terrible muscle injuries, and we're about to enter into the coldest months of the year, and they have a bunch of Champions League matches coming up. I mean, and their fixtures are okay, but not fantastic. I mean, I can understand the compulsion to bring him in. I'm not feeling that very strongly at the moment. I feel okay with my strike force of Vardy, Lukaku, and Kane. I mean, it's not like it's that far from the template. Yeah. If I were to bring out Vardy, I think I would bring in Agallo. And I mean, maybe I'd look at Giroud, although I don't like the next few fixtures for Arsenal. I think they're just okay.
Yeah.
They're away to Liverpool, away to Stoke, home to Chelsea. They get a little better starting in game week 24. So I really might just write it out with Jamie Vardy for the next 3 game weeks and then kind of figure out because they're away to Tottenham this game week, which isn't a great fixture. But then they're away to Aston Villa, and they're home to Stoke. And I could see him scoring in both those matches.
The way I'm viewing Aguero right now is as a differential. And I'm hoping there are a lot of managers out there like you who remain unconvinced, and Aguero is actually able to meet the expectations. And that is a big differential for those of us who have ridden it out with him and have him in our team. And I would say if you have the funds to bring him in without taking a point hit, or if you're interested in playing your wild card, go for it.
I do understand your logic. I mean, in a season where a lot of lower priced options are delivering, you do have the money to almost see bringing in Aguero as like taking a punt, right? Because you may have to make 2 transfers, but it's not like you have to totally rearrange your team the way you might in a different kind of year. So I do see that, and certainly I'd be a little nervous into this. I mean, let me put it this way: if he scores like two goals at home to Everton, I'm definitely going to be looking at bringing in Sergio Aguero.
Yeah.
So you know, I guess we'll see how this shakes out. I mean, I thought he looked a little tentative in that Watford match. To be honest, he looked pretty good in the first half. I thought he was on the ball a little too much. You know, he wasn't. You know, when Sergio Aguero is in really good form, he basically – it's like one touch, right? It's like yep. anywhere he is on the pitch, it's like one yep. touch and he can score. I thought he was a little tentative just in terms of, you know, getting his feet set and not quite wanting to make a decision. And, you know, he probably could have scored a couple goals early in that Watford match and didn't. And then he was really a non-factor in the second half until the 85th minute when he scores that really, you know, well-placed header. And I don't know.
I chalk that a lot up to the Man City midfield, which is really not doing it right now. He was yeah. getting zero service. And David Silva is really the key here.
Yeah.
That's the partnership that really allows Aguero to score as many goals as he wants to. And yeah. the reason he was a non-factor, I didn't think he looked terrible on the ball. I really didn't. I just think he wasn't getting the proper service and he wasn't getting it consistently. His runs weren't yeah. being rewarded.
I thought he had some more opportunities, and I thought he was a little profligate in the first half.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right. Yeah.
So I guess it's an inconclusive response. I maybe we could just say it's more of a mixed response, and that you're on board with the Aguero thing, and I'm sort of I'm still on the fence a little bit.
Right. Right. So game week 20 saw a terrible result for all of us Ozil owners. So it was like close to 37 or 40% of all active managers captained Mesut Ozil against at home to Newcastle.
Right. It turned out it didn't matter, though.
It didn't matter. Well, yeah, because nobody was a worthy captain choice. Unless you captained Lukaku and you got an assist, that's like the best case scenario this week.
Pretty much. I mean, did you ever think about captain? I mean, I guess you could, given his form, you couldn't captain Aguero when Mesut Ozil was at home to Newcastle, right?
No, absolutely not. I had taken a chance on Aguero the previous. Did I captain him against Leicester?
You did.
I did, yes. Yeah, that's right. So I took a chance there, and I got burned. So not again. And I just decided to go with the crowd in game week 20. And again, Aaron Ramsey totally screwed Ozil out of an assist because he can't finish. Blasted it, like, into the stratosphere.
Yeah, when I think I think Joel Campbell was wide open, like right next to him, basically, and had a tap in.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, Ramsey, God, talk about a player who, you know, looking at the stats, I mean, all like the sort of the, you know, the influence and you know, creativity, threat, all those things. I mean, you know, he was like right up there at the top of all those charts, and it just did not happen for him over the holiday fixtures. I mean, just a. Really, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, a little bit like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, I think, sometimes. And he really he's very conscious of wanting to score more, you know? I mean, it seems like it's really, you know, he's really trying to score more goals. And yeah. I just wonder how much of that's sort of taking him out of the match or something. I don't know. It's, yeah, I mean, no goals and no assists in the last four game weeks after, you know, those two big game weeks in a row.
So how are you feeling about Theo Walcott? We bigged up him in our festive period predictions. We had both picked him, you in game week 19, me in game week 20, to be our team captain. And he did zip.
Yeah, it was kind of old school Theo Walcott. Yeah, yeah. Did not happen. Very disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what to say, really, other than that it was a huge bummer and kind of shocking, really. I just did not expect him to play so poorly. I mean, he really just couldn't finish at all. And I mean, he spent like the whole game with his hands on his head because he missed another opportunity for Mesut Ozil. I mean, I guess he'd probably stay for this Liverpool match because I have other places that I'm trying to shore up first. But he won't be on my team for much longer, that's for sure.
Right, right. I will say this. A lot of the teams that look good, a lot of the FPL teams that look good over the break had doubled up on Arsenal defense. I saw a lot of teams in our private league who have check and goal and Bellerin out wide.
Yeah, that would have been a smart move. Um, I I brought in Bellerin, which worked out pretty well. I picked up one bonus point and two clean sheets.
Yeah.
So and then 1-0 away to Southampton, which I was not expecting. So that one, I ended up with one more point than I would have. I was really debating between him and Dan. Scott Dan were the two players that I was really going back and forth on. Cresswell was tempting too, but I just didn't trust that West Ham team enough. I mean, Cresswell would have been the player to bring in the end.
Yeah.
Even though he actually missed one game, but he picked up 10 in game week 18 and 9 in game week 20. So yeah,
who would have thought?
Yeah, exactly.
Especially against Liverpool.
We had talked about him as an option actually in the podcast, but we talk about everybody. But he was, you know, so he was another option, but in the end it came down to Dan and Bellerin. It was kind of a wash. I mean, I picked up one more point with Bellerin. I feel better about having him for the long run too. Even though the fixtures aren't great, because you know, he gets forward so much that there's always a little bit of a goal and assist threat from him.
And Koscielny will get a red card at some point this season. It's guaranteed. So
I mean, Koscielny, you know, he did pick up 15 points, you know, which, you know, I did kind of think about him. But honestly, you know, he picked up 0 points in the first game week and didn't play in the second game week and got kind of a wild goal, right? I mean, it was sort of from Ozil to Giroud's head to Koscielny's foot, and the whole thing took place in about like a second and a half. Right? I mean, it was a kind of a rapid fire goal. It was like, what? Like a goal?
It was like in a spy film where somebody busts into like the back kitchen of a restaurant and fires a gun and the bullet ricochets off of all the pots and pans.
Yeah, it kind of was. I mean, just the right place, the right time. I mean, to his credit, right? But yeah, it was kind of a weird one.
Okay, so one big knee jerk from Game Week 20 was Sergio Aguero. The other big knee jerk is Chelsea, who they demolished Crystal Palace 3-0. And now all the talk is, who are the Chelsea differentials? Are we bringing in Diego Costa?
Yeah, and that's a question that we got on Twitter too. Is the Chelsea defense worth investing more specifically? So, but yeah, Chelsea more broadly, I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, you know, it's funny. I hadn't even thought of it. We haven't talked about Costa once in this episode. I would like for him to become more. I mean, his price makes him pretty difficult to own. I will say, you know, he's still at 10.7 million. But, you know, I mean, he has.
What this season needs is a couple game changers like Aguero to pick up for him and for Costa to pick up for him and to have us make some real hard decisions.
So he didn't play. He got the really dumb yellow card ban because I think he got that yellow card like at the very end of that Watford match. And they actually would have reset for the next match.
Yep.
But he picked up a yellow card, so couldn't play away to Man United. So in the last two matches that he's played 90 minutes both matches, picked up 3 goals and 1 assist for a total of 22 points. So, you know, I mean, he's definitely someone to consider as an alternative to Sergio Aguero. And if you're looking, I mean, I guess it's someone that I really should be, someone like me should be looking at who's trying to make up some ground. You know, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like really.
My one concern is that Chelsea.
Nerve-wracking, the thought of bringing him in.
I'd be nerve-wracked as well, because I think that Crystal Palace flattered Chelsea a lot in this match. I think they looked terrible, and Chelsea had all the room that they needed to form an attack. And I'll be curious to see. You definitely have to sit it out one more week. I mean, they're going up against a tough Tony Pulis side in West Brom in game week 21. Granted, they are at the Bridge, but I'm not convinced.
It seems like Willian would be the player to look. You know, actually, that might maybe my move this game week. I mean, everyone's talking about Payet, but, you know, Willian, you know, home to West Brom, home to an Everton team that is, I mean, I can't remember the last time Everton kept a clean sheet. Actually, no, Everton kept a clean sheet just 2 weeks ago against Newcastle. But in general, Everton is not keeping a lot of clean sheets. And I think, I mean, Willian is 7.1 million. Only one goal, actually, in the last, one goal in the last 11 game weeks. It feels like he's been scoring more. He actually hasn't been, but he's been picking up assists the whole time. Picked up four assists in the last 4 game weeks.
He's like a cheap Mesut Ozil, and if this Chelsea team does take on form, Willian could be up there with Ozil in terms of being the assist provider and getting guaranteed points, attacking points every game.
Yeah, 3 goals, 6 assists, and 9 bonus points in the season so far. Fixtures, really pretty. I mean, you know, not it's not an amazing run, but home to West Brom, home to Everton, away to Arsenal, away to Watford, home to Man U, and home to Newcastle. I mean, you could definitely see some goals in at least, you know, what, 5 out of 6 of those fixtures.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Are you thinking about Willian? I mean, what are your thoughts on Chelsea?
No, I'm not thinking about Chelsea at all. I mean, even the defense is not terribly tempting to me. I feel like I said my piece many weeks ago when we had the Hazard discussion, and Chelsea still haven't shown enough to me to justify what I think are assets that are too expensive at this point. Yeah. They're playing like the way they play reflects the position that they are on the table, and they're too unpredictable. No, I'm not interested. I do agree that Willian would be the one if you bring in any.
Yeah, I think Willian, I think Costa's too expensive. I think Azpilicueta is, I mean, I know Zuma was kind of the player du jour, but Azpilicueta is only 0.3 million more. And probably a better bonus point threat.
Without a doubt. I would go Dave every time. Dave over Zoom every time.
Picked up 3 bonus points in that Man United match, and then picked up another one in the Crystal Palace match. And those were both fairly tricky fixtures, and you know, clean sheets in both. So I mean, you could see clean sheets in the next 2 game weeks. I mean, I do think that I think Azpilicueta at 5.7 million is an interesting option. That would be. If I had the luxury of replacing Virgil van Dijk this game week, which I really don't, because I think I really got to get rid of De La Feu, I think that van Dijk to Azpilicueta would be an interesting option, assuming that I didn't just like, you know, go with my brain and pick up Alderweireld.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that's probably the most enticing asset. And what guy who had a fantastic game against Crystal Palace's John Obi Mikel, who somehow found himself back in the starting lineup. So John Obi Mikel, like, he will never be in anyone's fantasy team ever, despite him being a good player. Now, okay, I have a question for you, Josh. He's been at Chelsea since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
How many goals has he scored in his 9-year tenure at the club?
It's 2006. Two.
Close. He scored one goal.
One goal. Wow.
They don't tell you.
He scores a fair amount too for his club. Is he Nigerian?
Yes. Is that right? Spot on. He's scored
forward, I think.
Well, if scoring 4 goals for his country of Nigeria is a lot, and it is a lot compared to one goal for Chelsea, then you are right. He is prolific.
I think he had a little run there where he scored like 2 goals in 3 matches or something like that. Maybe it was in the World Cup this year.
Yeah.
All right, Brandon. So let's get to our Twitter question. We've hit every other question over the course of the podcast.
So this is our featured Twitter question.
That's right. It's a twofer anyway. So this comes from Tom Butcher, Tom B 1980, who says, okay, so what are your thoughts on defenders to bring in? I like attacking fullbacks with Bertrand, Kolarov, Bellerin, Baines, but struggling. So I think we've covered this pretty thoroughly earlier on in the podcast. But I think that if you wanted an attacking fullback, I do think that Dave might be your guy.
I don't know. I mean,
Danny Rose isn't playing enough right now is the problem. He's not a consistent – if you want those attacking fullbacks, I guess Kyle Walker is an option. I'm not a huge Kyle Walker fan as a football player, but given the fixtures that are coming out for Leicester or for Tottenham, you know, home to Leicester, home to Sunderland, away to Crystal Palace, he's only 5.2 million too, so he's kind of
he's a cheap way. He's about the same price, if not 0.1 cheaper than Eric Dyer, so he's a cheap way into that Spurs back line, and right. He does get forward. But what about Glenn Johnson? I mean, I'm just newly on the Glenn Johnson train. I'm finding it.
Feeling good.
I'm feeling good. I haven't gotten any points from him yet. But that Stoke team we've talked about, their ability to get clean sheets out of nothing is pretty incredible.
What about Aaron Cresswell? That's another interesting option. 5.5 million. Picked up a goal and picked up one goal and five bonus points. And it's one goal, one clean sheet, five bonus points in the last two game weeks. I should say the last two game weeks he's played. He was out injured for the middle game week, and then three clean sheets in a row before that.
Yeah.
So I think he and at 5.5 million, very affordable. Definitely gets forward, can score and pick up assists. Has a goal, one goal and three assists in the season. I think he might be a player to look at. And the fixtures for West Ham are really quite good over the next, really like the next seven game weeks or so. They're pretty solid. I mean, they have one tough match at home to Man City, and then the rest of the matches are all pretty winnable.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like if you're out there wildcarding and you're looking at must-have teams to get defenders from, it's got to be West Brom, Stoke, Arsenal, and Spurs, right?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe Man United. I don't know. It's kind of depends on what they do in January.
True. Well, where you don't get your defender, that's where you fill in your goalkeeper, right? And De Gea, who I have in my goal right now, seems like the best bet for United.
Yep, agreed. Okay, this is a good last question when people are wildcarding. All right, so he says, wildcard time. Who are the this is Tom Butcher again. Who are the true must-haves to keep? And then he lists Kolarov, Bellerin, Mahrez, Ozil, Vardy, Lukaku, etc.
Right.
Who do we? Let's make this a little easier on ourselves. Let's pick absolute must-haves. So okay. looking at your team, and because someone like Kane, someone like Aguero, De Bruyne, these are not absolute must-haves. What players, if you were starting from scratch right now, would you consider to be absolute must-haves?
Mesut Ozil.
Okay. Yep. Agreed.
Hector Bellerin.
Okay. What about Riyad Mahrez?
God, I mean, it's the Leicester. The Leicester question right now is probably the biggest question in the game. Particularly,
to be fair, he's one missed penalty away from another double figure game week. I know that's a big but still, yeah. I mean, if he makes that penalty, then he's probably on for the goal and three bonus points. And yep. If it's a 1-0 game, that's an 11-point game week for him.
Yep,
which would be his. And again, this is like a big, this big qualifier here, but still, that would have been his fourth double figure haul in the last six game weeks.
Okay, so here are my five must-haves: Ozil, Mahrez, Bellerin, Lukaku, Ighalo.
I think I don't know. Yeah, Ighalo. Yeah. What about in goal? What do you think about Peter Cech? I guess you don't. That requires you to double up on Arsenal, which maybe you don't want to do.
Yeah, I suppose then it's an either or, either Peter Cech or Hector Bellerin.
It would have been so fun to have Peter Cech at the beginning of the season.
Like I just, did. Like, I had him, and I can tell you what, it was no fun at all. It was no fun.
When did you get rid of him? Because I see 11, 6, and 7 in game weeks 3, 4, and 5. Did you get rid of him like super early, like before your game week 3 wildcard?
Yeah, I got rid of him. I mean, he looked so garbage against West Ham in that first game. So I dropped him.
During the
wildcard. I wild carded him out of my team
right before he picked up 9 clean sheets and 17. Yeah,
classic. Yeah. Classic.
Yep. We've all been there. Yeah. So he would be a fun player to have. You just feel so safe with him, like so many saves, even picks, he's picked up 6 bonus points in the season or 5 bonus points in the season. But I guess of the defenders, I guess Bellerin would be the one I'd want to, right. Especially with Debushi leaving in January. All right. I think he's going to go on loan to West Brom, which is kind of interesting.
That is interesting. That is interesting.
All right. So I think I'm with you on this. I think.
Even Ighalo? Ighalo, you would say, is a must-have?
Ighalo is a tricky one. Even Lukaku, I think, is – I mean, given what he's done so far, yes. But their fixtures are getting a little bit worse. I mean, you needed him for that great run I guess, I mean, if Lukaku isn't a must-own, I don't know who is, right? Because, I mean, the guy just delivers basically every game week.
Yeah.
You know, is he the top overall points leader? I think he's pretty close. No, he's behind Mahrez, but you wouldn't know it given the way people talk about these teams over the course of the season, but
yeah.
Lukaku's actually scored 4 more points than Mesut Ozil over the course of the season.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And he's still only 9.3 million. I guess, yeah, he is basically essential. He scored 15 goals and 5 assists in the season. He's having the kind of season that Sergio Aguero used to have. And it's amazing that we're not just captaining Lukaku every game week. That, like, yeah. It's this sort of thing where we're like, well, maybe I'll do a Gallo. I don't know. You know, I mean, the guy is – he scored in what, 4? He scored 7 – 9 of 7 matches, picked up an assist, even, you know, the game he didn't score. So, yeah,
he's,
I don't know.
He's gone a long way in repairing his reputation for being a classic FPL troll.
So, yeah.
Good for you, Romelu. All right, so I think we should wrap it up. Let's save a little in the tank. I think I have some left in the tank for our optimizer pod for Game Week 21, which will go up late this weekend. So are you going to be ready for that, Josh?
I think so. I do think I've kind of picked up some laryngitis over the course of this episode. This got a little long, this one. Ticked on a little bit.
We had a lot to cover. Listen, we missed 3 game weeks, so we want to keep everybody up to speed with our incisive commentary.
That's true.
Hey, a quick plug before we sign off. I wanted to mention, speaking of the compelling Leicester City-Manchester City match, you can actually hear me talking about this match on a podcast called The Big Game, hosted by our friend Justin Hargett. And you can check that out at The Big Game Pod, where Justin does a weekly show about whatever the big game is of the week. We've mentioned his pod before on the show.
That's true. And I've been on to talk about Michigan State football before.
And tennis, right?
And tennis, yeah. I'm a big tennis fan.
So there you go. Shout out to Justin and the Big Game Pod. Also, remember to subscribe to us on iTunes. We're on SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, basically anywhere you can get podcasts. Feel free to leave us a review. We'd really appreciate it. You can find more information at alwayscheating.com.
All right, Brandon. Good talking to you, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, hail cheaters.
Hail Poku.